The London Eye.
Husband and wife team, David Marks and Julia Barfield, came up with the idea for the Eye in response to a 1993 competition asking Londoners to design a new landmark celebrating the millennium. Their idea caught on, and the wheel opened on March 9, 2000. At 443 feet high, the London Eye is currently the fourth largest Ferris wheel in the world, and on a clear day, you can see as far as Windsor Castle. But the London Eye doesn't crack the top 20 tallest structures in London itself. The entire wheel weighs more than 1,000 tons. It was assembled flat and moved onto 8 temporary islands on the River Thames. The Eye has 32 capsules, one for each of the 32 city boroughs. But as with many buildings and other structures, there is no number 13 capsule. Whether the superstition about that number is warranted or not, the cars skip from 12 to 14. A ride on the London Eye takes 30 minutes. With more than 3.5 million people taking a ride every year, it's now the most popular paid tourist attraction in the UK. More than 5,000 engagements and 500 weddings have taken place on the Eye since it opened. Many cities, including Las Vegas, Seattle, and Atlanta, have opened observation wheels themselves, whose designs were directly inspired by the attraction. An exact replica of the wheel can be found about 30 miles away from London, in miniature form, anyway, at Legoland Windsor.
Stonehenge.
Stonehenge was built over many hundreds of years. It's one of the world's most famous monuments and stands on Salisbury Plain in Wiltshire. Its giant stones can be seen from miles around. Work began in the late Neolithic Age, around 3000 BC. Over the next 1,000 years, people made many changes to the monument. The last changes were made in the early Bronze Age, around 1500 BC. Only a few stones are left standing today. It definitely took a huge effort to build Stonehenge. The only tools the builders had were made of stone, wood, and rope. The first task was to cut the boulders into shape. Archaeologists believe that the ancient Britons hammered wedges of wood into cracks in the stone. When the wood was soaked in water, it expanded and split the stone. Next, the builders used chisels and hammers to shape them. The stones were then transported to the building site. They were probably carried on rafts down rivers, then dragged overland by teams of men and oxen. It's believed that the stones were placed on giant wooden sledges and pulled along the ground using log rollers. The builders dug deep ditches for the stones. Then they pulled on ropes to raise them and packed the ditches with rocks to hold the stones in place. We may never know exactly why Stonehenge was built. Some people think that such a massive monument was used to study the movements of the sun and moon. Other people think it was a place of healing. The ancient Britons believed that the sun and moon had a special power over their lives. It is very likely that they held special ceremonies at Stonehenge on Midsummer's Day, the longest day of the year, and on Midwinter's Day, the shortest day of the year. Many experts believe that Stonehenge was used as a sacred site for funerals. They suggest that people carried the dead along the River Avon and then walked up to Stonehenge in a grand procession. The most important funeral ceremony of the year was probably held on Midwinter's night at Stonehenge. Stonehenge is just one of hundreds of stone circles that have been found in Britain. During the early Bronze Age, circles built from stone or wood played a very important part in the religious life of the British people.
Double-decker buses. For most Londoners, the London bus is a nightmare.
It's the alternative option you never want to take, your last resort when, late at night, your phone dies and an Uber can't whisk you away from whatever house party, rave, ironic disco, karaoke, actual disco, rooftop bar you are trying to escape. Slow and meandering, the London bus, particularly in its nocturnal form, is more of a mobile rubbish bin full of crumpled cans of Carlsberg and greasy half-eaten boxes of fried chicken than a viable mode of transport. Yet, to the rest of the world, London's double-decker bus is one of the capital's most iconic features alongside the red telephone booth, the Queen, and pubs. Where did these quintessentially London vehicles come from, and were they always littered with the nibbled bones of fried chicken? The first double-decker bus did not originate from London, but somewhat surprisingly, from Paris, where a businessman set up the route, picking up passengers in a horse-drawn double-decker omnibus. Inspired by the success of the Parisian bus service, George Shillibeer started the first London bus service in 1829, offering a route between Paddington and Bank. Shillibeer's bus could carry 22 people and cost 1 shilling per journey, the equivalent of 5 pence in today's money. While it seems cheap to us, the poor Victorians thought the shilling was far from a bargain. The first engine-powered double-decker bus appeared in London in 1923. Various companies competed against each other for bus dominance. By 1924, there were over 200 independent buses operating in the city, running along popular routes. Such independent buses were known as pirate buses. Not shackled to an official route, pirate buses would sometimes take side streets to get to destinations faster. It was because of the competing bus companies that London General Omnibus Company, the biggest operator in the city, painted their buses red to stand out from the competition. The Metropolitan Police approved of the red buses. The colour was so easy to spot, acting as a warning to those crossing the street. The most iconic version of the London double-decker bus is the Routemaster. Designed in 1956, the Routemaster bus operated for more than half a century in the capital. It was most famous for its open rear entrance, which also caused its eventual decline in use. The Routemaster was the cause of many accidents as people ran and jumped onto it whilst it was in motion. It was also very challenging for elderly and handicapped people to use. Eventually, it was replaced in 2005 by modern double-decker buses. That said, you might still see Routemasters driving through central London on one of the two heritage routes. But why did double-decker buses flourish in London more so than single-decker buses? In a place like London, with so many narrow passages and shifting roads, the length of a single-decker was problematic. The arc of its turn would slow down and disrupt traffic. Besides, tourists and sightseers enjoy the view of a double-decker bus. And probably the biggest pro of the double-decker bus is this: more seating space.